Moncrief on News Talk.
Did you ever walk down a street and think, this is a nice street? That could be down to the buildings or the general vibe of the place. It could be because your favourite shoe shop is at the other end of it. According to urban planners, some streets work better than others. And there are psychological factors at play here. Eleanor Ruth is a designer and the founder of Boyne Creative. Good afternoon, Eleanor.
Hi, how's it going?
Not too bad. Now, what's Gestalt got to do with this?
So Gestalt principles or Gestalt psychology is a field of psychological research from the early 20th century. Essentially, these German psychologists were wondering, how do our brains process visual information? So they came up with, and you'll have to forgive my pronunciation here, the law of pregnance, which says that we default to the simplest possible interpretation of any complex scene. Essentially, we group and simplify what we see to reduce the cognitive load of processing the information of our visual environment. There are seven of these principles, so there won't be a test later, but they are similarity, common fate, proximity, figure ground, closure, continuation, and symmetry. So a good example of this would say, let's say if you had a circle, a square, and a triangle, and they were all the same shade of red, we'd naturally think that they're a group, even though obviously they're different shapes. So that's kind of an example of how it can be applied to visual information. It's not always applied to design and architecture, but I was speaking with the folks over at Progress Ireland, and we were thinking about why, particularly in Ireland, certain streets like O'Connell Street versus Grafton Street feel a bit nice walk down, whereas maybe on one you might want to walk a bit quicker just to get through it.
Yeah.
And these principles can help us to understand that.
Yeah. Now, people no doubt will be coming up with their own reasons why they might prefer Grafton Street to O'Connell Street. But I was very interested to learn they're pretty much the same length, even though O'Connell Street would seem much bigger.
Yeah, it really does feel like O'Connell Street is sort of a trek that you have to get through, whereas Grafton Street's just a cute little street that you walk around. Part of that is actually because of another reason called an isovist. So that's something from spatial analysis. That's basically the amount of space you can see from a given point in space. So what that means is when you're on one end of O'Connell Street, because it's a straight street and it's quite wide and open, you can see down the whole thing. So it feels a bit more daunting and you can't really see the edges very well. So it doesn't really give you anything to sort of anchor onto. Whereas on Grafton Street, because it curves around, you're only ever looking at a little part of it at a time and you can see the buildings, the pavement, everything quite close to you. It sort of invites you to go around the corner and see a little bit more and a little bit more, rather than feeling like, oh, I got to get through this whole street as quickly as possible, like very often we feel on O'Connell Street, rather.
Yeah. Now, I mean, what you were talking about organizing information, the way the brain mm-hmm. organizes information. So does that mean effectively if a street is too busy, there's too much to take in?
Yeah, you can pack in quite a lot of, you know, buildings and businesses on one street and still have it feel like it's one coherent group. Part of it comes down to the architectural decisions and the design decisions being made on that street. So if you have a street that, for example, all of the buildings sort of are at a similar height or are protrude onto the street a similar amount, so they're kind of all in line with each other, they'll feel much more like a group. And that's a part of a Gestalt principle called proximity. If things are close and grouped together physically, we view them as one group. And sort of what that means is your brain can pass over them quickly, look at it, say, that's one group, that goes together, and you don't have to spend a lot more cognitive energy on them. Obviously, when you're walking places, you've got a lot of other stuff on your mind. You don't want your brain to have to be doing all this work in the background. And similarly, if there's one company that in their shop front are using really bright neon signs and they've got a lot of, you know, signs on the street outside or things sort of in your way when you're walking, then that can be something that breaks up your visual environment. And again, you have to process that in the back of your mind as you're walking down the street. It just adds to your kind of overall background stress level as you're walking.
Mm. So if you're on the street and the buildings are more or less the same height and the same shape, does that make for a more pleasurable experience when you're walking down that street?
Typically it does. That's not to say that they always have to be like that. The interesting thing about these principles is you don't need to have all of them for a street to feel pleasing. So if, for example, the classic example we would give in Ireland are the sort of Georgian squares. So if you think of like one side of Merrion Square, those are similar on a number of levels that help us group them. So they're using similar brick colours, similar materials. They're using similar window shapes, that kind of thing. And that would be something that would lead us to view it as quite pleasing. Whereas if they were all different materials and different heights and had, you know, different signage on them, that would be something that we would typically see as not so nice.
Right. And we'd have this reaction to it perhaps without even realizing we're having this reaction to it, or we might ascribe it to other reasons.
Oh, absolutely. Like something you realize when you work in design is that everyone has these intuitions about design and architecture. They just don't have the language or the tools to express it because, you know, it's not like they're studying it in school or anything. That's why people tend to say things are nice or not so nice. And these more general terms, because they don't have the background to understand the principles going on underneath.
Yeah. So the fact that, say, going back to the poor O'Connell Street, I'm going to be picking on O'Connell Street. Is the fact that it's wide a factor rather than it's just straight?
Definitely. So the width of it means that you can't really see the whole street as you're walking down it. It feels much more open in a negative sense. So if you're walking down O'Connell Street, you might be able to see the things close to you on one side, but then you have the lane of traffic, you know, the sort of middle path as well, another lane of traffic, and then more shop fronts. There's no way that as you're walking quickly down a street, you're able to process all of that at once. It sort of leaves this unanswered question almost in your mind as you're walking through it. And that, it seems like something that wouldn't affect you that much, but in the background of your mind, subconsciously, that is having a big effect on you.
Hmm. But at the same time, people would say, you know, there's parts of Paris that are lovely where the streets are wide. Or what springs to mind now, it's probably unfair to compare Barcelona to any city, given that there's all the fabulous architecture there. But leaving aside all the, you know, Gaudi buildings, that has kind of a block system where the streets are fairly wide and fairly straight, actually. But they're lovely.
Definitely. No, I mean, some of wide boulevards in like on the continent can be absolutely beautiful and they can be some of their biggest tourist attractions as well. I think that's kind of a good example of how if you can't adhere to one of these principles, if you adhere to the other ones, you can sort of make up for it. So if you think on the, you know, wide boulevards of Paris, or if you're thinking of the streets in Barcelona, they are using very similar building materials. They're using very similar architectural styles, with the exception of the Gaudi buildings, which are a draw in their own right. They're sort of sharing a visual language that compensates for the fact that you can't fully see them. If you expect the thing ahead of you to look like the thing next to you, that's almost a resolution in your mind as well.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So there does need to be a degree of uniformity. Now, one of our listeners says we've changed so many of our Georgian buildings in Dublin. In other European cities, they always restore those buildings. All the streets here look so corporate and over-modernised. Is age a factor here at all? Are there, you know, examples of modern streets that work as opposed to just Victorian or Georgian streets that work?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. It's something that you hear a lot. It feels almost like something has been lost. Like, oh, we used to know how to make streets that were really beautiful and now we don't. There are a few reasons for that. Partially, it's, you know, just things are being built over time. A fire might happen in a certain building, it gets replaced, and the person building that individual building isn't really thinking about the street around it and isn't thinking about how it fits into the overall environment around them. That can definitely happen. But I will say the interesting thing, and something I like about using sort of psychological principles to understand design and architecture, is it doesn't have to be prescriptive to one aesthetic. Yes, Georgian buildings and streets are beautiful, and part of that is because they adhere to these principles, but that there's nothing about these principles that means a brand new street or new building couldn't, you know, fit in with them. There's a few examples. There's great work being done in Copenhagen. They've sort of transformed this industrial port, and they've done it in such a way that is, because they're managing it sort of all at once, they're thinking about these principles. They're thinking about the best practices of architecture, how we can make this yes, be well designed and serve the community that it needs to, but also, again, it comes back to the idea of similar building materials, really thinking from like the top down, how are we going to make this look cohesive? Something I like about what they've done is they haven't gotten rid of the original port buildings. They've just updated them a bit so that they now fit in with the new buildings that are also being built. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to fully revert back to a golden era of design, but you also don't have to let go of the past completely.
Yeah. Are there examples in Ireland of modern architecture where it all hangs together, in your view?
I think one of the interesting things about Ireland is we don't do a lot of full street redesigns or building them from the ground up like that. So we're sort of building little areas together. There's the Meeting House Square in Temple Bar. So that's enclosed by buildings on three sides. And then the fourth side opens onto Eustace Street. And there's like a little canopy overhead on it. That pretty closely adheres to some of the Gestalt principles. So closure is one of the principles. And that basically means if we see something incomplete, we can complete it in our minds. So having those three walls that are made of the same material, the same color, the same kind of general aesthetic, even though it has an open side on it, on one side, that all looks like it fits nicely together. And as you know yourself, Temple Bar can be quite a chaotic place to be. Mm. But when you come across a Meeting House Square, it does seem calmer. And part of that is because your brain doesn't have to do all this processing in the background.
Yeah. Similarly, could you say that about Patrick Street in Cork?
Yeah, that's true. You could also say that there's a lot going on Patrick Street, but you can, it is sort of built with one aesthetic in mind. And because it has sort of all these buildings quite densely packed in together, again, that leads into the idea of proximity. They're all quite close together. They have their individual aesthetics, but they share some repeated elements. So that makes it easier for us to process them.
Yeah, and I think that's because a lot of Patrick Street was maybe destroyed in the War of Independence. I'm open to correction on that, but it was rebuilt in the 1920s, a lot of it, and that would explain why it is.
Yeah,
that
I think they call it the burning of 1920, which is quite a dramatic title for it. But yes, they did a lot of rebuilding, so they had to think about it all at once. You notice a lot in continental Europe, let's say, they have a lot of areas that look quite cohesive because in World War II, they would have experienced a lot of bombing, and then they've built them all up kind of from the ground up again, starting thinking, well, if we're going to have to build a whole section of a city, what do we want it to look like all at once?
Yeah. Okay. And I suppose, yeah, that there's very few places in Ireland where you get that opportunity to do that, really.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we are always trying to build more in Ireland. I feel like that's like a continual thing every Irish person talks about. And when I was speaking with Progress Ireland, that's something who I wrote this article for. That's something they're focused on a lot. They're focused on like driving the country forward. How can we make, you know, bigger improvements? And one of those things is the new things that we're building. How can we make them something that people like, particularly if you're thinking outside of cities with big housing complexes, like big estates, essentially? How can you make those places that people like being in that aren't, yes, they're modern, but we don't feel like we're losing something for the sake of modernity?
Mm, yeah. Though then there can be an element of anonymity or a feeling of anonymity in those places if you're just looking at endless stretches of houses that are exactly the same.
Yeah, there definitely can be. I think housing estates are an interesting problem because they can be similar in a lot of ways, but they're quite broken up from one another. You don't feel the same sense of identity looking at, a big housing estate where everything are detached houses versus, for example, you know, something terraced where it's immediately obvious that it's a group. There are ways to, you know, kind of get around that. Again, thinking about how close things are, how far apart they are, what the actual street itself is like and what elements you're putting on the street. So are you using the same trees everywhere? Are you using the same lamps? That kind of thing can really help to make those feel more cohesive.
Now, I'm glad you mentioned trees. A lot of people are texting in about trees. The trees seem to be a key difference to them as to whether they like a street or not.
I think that makes a lot of sense. That's something that, it's not necessarily directly related to these principles, but we, you know, our brains were made to process mostly natural environments. You know, urbanism is something much, much more recent if you think about it in terms of actual human history. And there's studies to show that, you know, even having a plant inside can make people feel better. part of what I think helps with that on streets in particular is that it gives you a clear sense of where the street, the boundary of the street is. So if there's a line of trees, let's say if we're thinking about, you know, a Parisian boulevard again, they have those lines of trees that are right up against the curb. So you know that that's where the street ends. It's almost boxing you in, kind of, but in a positive sense. Again, if we think about like Merrion Square, for example, or St. Stephen's Green, you have the lovely Georgian buildings on one side, then you have the road, but you also have kind of a wall of green almost, which can be quite pleasing.
Yeah. So in terms then of building new homes for people and building housing estates, are there lessons that could be learned that could be implemented there?
Yeah, I think for any new building, I mean, or any new building project, housing or otherwise, thinking about the general underlying psychological principles that tend to make people feel more welcome in a space. So using similar building materials, making sure that you're very considerate of how close a building is. Now, obviously for housing, and it's sort of a whole kettle of fish on its own, people have opinions about how close they want to be to their neighbours. That needs to be taken into account. But you can do things, even if you're not thinking about the houses, like I said, to the sort of estates themselves, how you want to, you know, signpost that this is an estate and there's a different estate next to it. That kind of thing is something to consider. How wide you want the streets to be, what repeated elements you want there to be, like we were saying, trees, lamp posts, you know, do you want there to be benches? That will invite people to, even if they don't sit on them, that will make people feel more invited into a space. So yeah, there's a lot to consider there. And the great thing is that it doesn't have to be prescriptive to one aesthetic. You don't have to be building red brick houses to be able to achieve this. You know, it can look, these things can look very distinct, but still adhere to these underlying principles.
Eleanor, thank you very much for speaking with us today. That was Eleanor Ruth. She's a designer and the founder of Boyne Creative.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.